Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we'd like to welcome everyone to RD People Health and Wellbeing conference call to discuss its fourth quarter 2018 results. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet and the website www.rd.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find the light show presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will only be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of RD management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operational factors could also affect the future results of RD and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcílio Pousada, CNO, Mr. Eugênio de Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Marcílio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Okay, hello. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of results of the fourth quarter 2018 RD. As always, Eugênio present the numbers. And before the Q&A, I'll talk about the 2018 and 2019 progress for us. And Eugenio has some points about an off acquisition also. Eugenio, please.
Well, hello, everybody. Thanks for attending our 2018 conference call. I'd like to start by saying that 2018 was a challenging year for us. Obviously, it was a year of softer growth with mature stores below zero, and this has resulted in margin pressures that obviously affected our profitability. On the other hand, we have reached tremendous milestones in terms of our strategy. I'd like to mention, for example, we did a record expansion by opening 240 stores and into the states. We were able to recover share through the year, and we ended up in the fourth quarter with very high market share. We did a very ambitious price repositioning for the company, which obviously has had an effect on the softer growth, but I think positioned the company very effectively for the future. And finally, I think we started a very ambitious digital transformation. We launched, for example, click and collect for every single store, and I think we have more things being prepared for this transformation. We'll be talking about all these things over the presentation. So the highlight of the year here, we ended the year with 1,825 stores. We opened 240 stores and closed 25. We ended the year also with 12.9% of market share, a 90 bits increase with stability in São Paulo, which is something that we're very proud about because we face tremendous competition here. Our revenues reached 15.5 billion, an increase of 12% with 2.7% for same-store sales. Our margin totaled 28.6%. This is a 20 bps loss due to the 4Bio mix effect, but if you consider only retail, we managed to defend our margins, which were stable. We did 1,195.2 million of EBITDA, so an increase of 5.7%, even though there is a 50 bps margin pressure. Our net income also increased by 7%. We consumed 140 million of free cash flow and 340 of total cash flow, but we still have very low leverage, 0.6 net debt to EBITDA, to be more specific. And finally, yesterday, we signed an agreement to buy 100% of the capital of Bonofre. This was an opportunistic transaction. I'll talk more about that in a moment. But this also has a very interesting strategic value in terms of accelerating our digital transformation. We'll be talking about that as well. Okay, page 4. I think here we can see 2018 under a historic perspective. As I mentioned, we reached 1,800 stores. When we did the merger in 2011, we had then less than 800 stores. So over this period, we did 1,000 new stores. And the fact that our EBITDA increased from less than 300 million to nearly 1.2 billion is the main evidence of the quality of the expansion. The only way we were able to expand our profitability this way is because these 1,000 new stores are to the very least as good as the 800 legacy stores that we had back then. On page 5, we can also talk about market share. So our store share has been increasing bit by bit. We did 2.3% store share last year. But when you look at market share in terms of revenues, despite the fact that we had softer growth last year, we still managed to gain 40 bits for the average of the year, and we still managed to end the year with a 90 bits gain in the fourth quarter, which was very, very substantial, and which points to the success of our price repositioning. We can also see on the right hand in the chart the gap that we have over the rest of the market in terms of revenues per store, which is the main driver of profitability in this industry. On page 6, we ended the period, as I mentioned before, 1,825 stores. We opened a total of 240 stores in the year, closed 25, and ended the period with 35.6% of the stores still undergoing maturation. On page 7, we can give more color on the expansion. I think the first message here is that we entered two new states last year. We entered Maranhão with 9 stores in the northeast, and we entered Pará in the north region with 19 stores. We have at least 10 more stores in Pará to open in the next months. With the demise of BidBan, there's a huge opening for us in Pará, and we're committed to become the second brand in the state and the reference brand for the A-class. This is going really well. We have tremendous profitability in that market. With these two new states, we have total 22 states where we have our brand position. This represents 98% of the Brazilian pharmaceutical market. And in all these states, we have, obviously, the new states, we don't have a mature brand yet, but we have tremendous initial results that point to mature store revenues in line with the rest of Brazil. And wherever we have a mature operation, we have very similar revenues per store. We have very consistent profitability per store. So this growth platform is very unique in the market. We have seen tremendous pains in the past when we started moving out of São Paulo, but regardless of how difficult or easy each market was for us, today, there is no more pain. This is a growth platform that has supported 240 store openings every year. This is what we did last year. This is our guidance for this year. I also like to highlight that if we consider the Northeast and the North regions, which have been the latest frontiers of our expansion, we have more than 230 stores already in those markets that have been developed over the last few years. Here on the right, in terms of market share, we ended the year at a very high point. We gained 90 bps of market of national share in the fourth quarter. We are able to maintain the share in São Paulo despite the increased competition we faced. I think this is a prowess by the company. We're very proud of this stability. It wasn't like that through the year. We were losing share over the year, but as our new pricing strategy started working and as time elapsed to allow the results to happen, we have managed to recover the market share we lost through the year and end the year with stability. And then in every other market, we have been in a very significant way. On page 8, talking about revenues, we increased our total revenues by 12% in the year. This is 11% retail growth with 37.3% growth for Fubio. In the fourth quarter, we already see a very different performance with 14.1% total growth, of which 13.1% is retail. The rest was done by 4Bio. Here on the right, when we look at the mix, there's a very clear separation. We have seen a tremendous performance in the front shop, both OTC and HPC, especially with OTC. There were switches in the market early switches, I would say, because there is more to come, that have helped a lot in OTC. So OTC, we did 18% growth in the fourth quarter, 16.6 in the year. And then the other interesting aspect is that we already see generics catching up with branded. The picture we've seen through the year has been generics way behind branded, which was a consequence of the strong pricing investment we did in generics. So early on, we saw a lot of price reduction, and the volume was compensating that to provide for something around zero in terms of generics growth. As time elapsed, as we had more time for the strategy to prove itself correct, we are at a point in which there's still the relative price pressure, but the volume growth has been so huge in generics that we already see generics revenue catching up with branded revenues. So on page nine, we can talk about the comps here. And we're coming from an all-time low, 3Q18, of 3.2% negative for mature stores, and now we reached 0.6 positive. This was the best quarter of the year in terms of comps. This is a result of the sequential improvement through the pricing strategy, as well as from the fact that our comp base is getting easier as we move forward. So our expectation is that we will start the year where we ended, but over the next quarters, this comp should move up so that we can, if we're successful, we'll end the year with the fourth quarter around inflation or close to inflation, something like that. This will be a consequence of continued sequential improvement, as well as easier comp base as the year progresses. On page 10, we talk about margins and working capital. The total gross margins for the year went down by 20 bps, which is exactly the 4Bio mix effect. 4Bio grows faster with lower gross margin, so there's a mix effect. But the retail gross margin has been flat. So the paradox is that we invested so much in pricing, but we still defended our gross margin. This happened as a result of a combination of things. I mean, first, we had a lot of pricing improvements in the front store. We implemented a new pricing platform. Addition to that, we improved purchasing terms like we try to do every year, so this also helped. And then there's a third factor that also relates to the cash cycle, which is the fact that we have done a lot of opportunity buys to take advantage of such opportunities, and this helped us maintain the margins. The consequence, however, is that the cash cycle has grown by 4 days. So as we enter in 2019, the margin that we'll have in the year, the gross margin we expect for the year, has to do with the ability to maintain this kind of opportunity buys. It's too early to know if we'll be able to maintain the same level of opportunity buys to maintain the gross margin. There is at least a risk that with less opportunity buys, with a normalization of the cash cycle, we could see some gross margin pressure in the year. This is something that we are as we move forward. On page 11, we talk about the expenses, which has been the main source of pressure. We saw 50 bps pressure in the fourth quarter, 20 bps from personnel. This is a direct consequence of loss of operating leverage. We have 20 bps rental pressure as well. In the end of the year, the IGPM reached 9 or 10%, so we've seen tremendous pressure in rental renewals. And then we had 10 bps of logistics pressure. We opened a new DC. We opened so many stores in Pará, which is right now an expensive shipping cost because it's so far away. So this pressure on logistics, 10 bps, and also 10 bps from new stores. We ended the year with a lot of stores ready to open in 2019, more than the previous year, and this has also pressured our expenses. Then we saw a 10-bit dilution that helped mitigate those pressures due to lower variable compensation, and a 20-bit dilution from the 4Bio mix effect. 4Bio, as I mentioned, has lower margins, but also has lower expenses. So the growth helps on the expense side and harms on the margin side. On page 12, summing it up, our EBITDA for the year totaled nearly 1.2 billion. We're talking 311 million in the fourth quarter, which is a 5.7% increase over previous year. So despite 50 bit margin pressure, we saw a nominal EBITDA growth here in the year. And when you look at the retail EBITDA, despite the pressures that we face, we're still talking about 8% retail EBITDA with one third of the stores yet to mature. So I think it shows the robustness of the business. And then 4Bio had 17 million of EBITDA, had 70 million of EBITDA last year. It's a lower margin, but the volumes are growing very fast. And the numbers we have of 4Bio are better than any expectation we might have had when we bought the company. On page 13, we talk about the net income. We did nearly 550 million in the year and 155 million in the fourth quarter, which is a 7% net income growth versus the 4Q17. And then we had a 10-bit gain on the net margin in the quarter. We moved this quarter a significant number of non-recurring expenses. The bulk of this is related to increase in labor contingencies. This is comprised of labor claims filed in previous years. What happened is that with the labor reform, as there are less new claims made against the company, the speed of the court has increased, and this has made clear that our provision was insufficient. So we revised the criteria. We have, I think, now a much more conservative criteria. But then there is a pressure of 47 million related to claims of previous years, but which were adjusted in the quarter. There is also a pressure in the quarter related to claims of the year, but this is business as usual, so this is not adjusted. Page 14, we had a free cash flow consumption of 140 million in the year, and a total cash consumption of 341, but we still maintain a very healthy, very low leverage of 0.6 net debt to EBITDA. Then on page 15, obviously, our share price has fallen 36%. I think there was also a peak when it reached 90, but still, in a tougher year, the share price followed. The way we look at this, I mean, what concerns us is not the share price. What concerns us is the performance of the business. We try to do the best every day in terms of long-term value creation, and we believe that if we're right, the share price will show up and will show on the long term. We are not managing or driven by short-term price pressures or even short-term price gains on our shares. Okay, so this is what I have prepared. I'm passing to Marcelo to summarize the year and talk about next year, and I'll be back to talk about the Onofre acquisition. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Eugenio. Okay, let's go to page 16. Okay, we'll talk about a little bit about 2018, okay? It was a challenging year for us, but when we talk about these challenging years, we have to talk about cycles. We always talk about this kind of cycles in our business. If you look in our history in the past, always have this ups and downs in this business, okay? I have a good number to show for you. You're looking for in Abrafarma numbers, that is, or that call for us, the opens for the competition. They open, if you look in the last 12 months, in January 2018, 546 stores. In January 19, they opened only 327 stores. This show for us the cycles happened in 2018. The market opened a lot of stores to compete against us, and you suffer during the year. We suffer also try to reduce the price in generic. We know how important the generic market for us, and we do this all the year. Then we lose only 50% in margin. And the number one problem was expenses. Very difficult to dilute the expenses when we grow the mature stores below the inflation. But we did a very good several milestones, good strategic milestones for us. We opened 240 stores. When you look in 2013, when you open 130 stores, this would be a dream for us to open the tournament. But better than 240 stores, we opened 20 stores per month with good shapes, good stores in nice corners. The people is there to open the store, to serve the customers also. We are in 22 different Brazilian states. We are almost in all the Brazilian pharmaceutical market. But what's better here? 86% of our stores is located at 1.5 kilometers to 8 customers. Then we are not only in the good states in Brazil, but we are in the customers behind people. We increase our share. We invest a lot in generics. It is good for us. Generics always in the past was not main strategy, but starts to do a main strategy right now. We learn a lot in generics. We saw a lot of elasticity price also when increase. We reduce the price, the number, the volume starts to grow. This is good for us to understand about the future. And we initiate our digital transformation, okay? We closed a new strategic plan. We start working this plan in February 2018 and including closing in August 2018. And the main driver for this strategic plan is a customer centricity strategy, which is the digital in the center of the business. If you look at the market, you know, we never see a lot of competition like this year, but you are much more stronger when you compare with the competition this year than the past, because we closed the year with 1,825 stores in 22 states, but you have 31 million active customers in our database. This, together with our balance sheet, which are numbers, give for us a big difference between compare our numbers with the competition numbers. We are much more stronger right now than you looking for last year. Let's go to page 17 and talk about 2019. Our guidance for new stores will be the same. You are opening 204 stores. We have almost 170 contracts signed for us here, the same number that we had last year, okay? We are enhancing the popular format. We know this is important for our future. This is important for to keep the growing, to keep the pace in 204 stores per year. We know that if you do that with a higher and Drogasil brand, it's nice for us. We are changing this in 5 stores and doing very well. We are planning to open more stores in the popular format for the future also. When we talk about the new strategic plan, we talk about the customer centricity strategy, okay? But not only customer centricity strategy. We're looking for the digital strategy. We know the omnichannel customer buy more for us. The omnichannel customer buy more with frequencies and buy more in the average ticket also. Then we are planning to increase the numbers of digital customers for this year. Our goal to reach 2 million omnichannel customers in the end of this year. We have right now 400,000. It will be a big challenge for the company. We are doing this right now. We start to work with the agile teams. We have 3 agile teams right now, and we start to work more with advanced analytics also. We know that important for our results, for our EBITDA margin, to increase the numbers, the growth, the company, the mature stores. We really believe in the end of this year, we start to go again, the mature stores, above the inflation, a little bit below the inflation. Why you do that? Because I talk the cycles, the competition starts to open less stores than last year, and we can increase the average TDK. All the investments in generic we did in 2018, we don't have to do the same in 2019. The other point that I'm working very, very strong with the team is to reduce the expenses. We know that we did a very good business in 2016 and 17, and we need to do better right now with use the matrix expenses to put all the departments together to try to reduce expenses. And we know that if you use advanced analytics to take the decisions for the company, you can make less expenses to speak in our business. We hire a consult company to help us do that, and you can see the results of this reducing expenses, not in this year, but maybe in 2020. So right now, Eugene, we will stress a little bit about the Onofre acquisition, and we're here for the Q&A. Eugenio?
Okay. So before talking about the rationale and the structure, I'd like to give an overview of Onofre. Onofre is a very traditional drug store chain in Brazil, which was acquired in 2013 by CVS. Last year, Onofre posted 480 million in gross revenues, but it's important to mention here that the company has very negative EBITDA and net income. So we're talking about a turnaround here. Obviously, and also, there is no financial leverage involved here. The company has, financially, the Onofre is very, very healthy, has a very healthy balance sheet, although there's a big challenge in terms of profitability, as I mentioned. We're talking about a chain with 50 stores, 47 of which are in São Paulo, and e-commerce represents 45% of the revenues. So one of the main motivations of why we did the acquisition relates to accelerate our digital strategy, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And the other aspect here is that despite the relatively small size, because it belongs to CVS, OneOffer is a fully formal company, with very well-structured back office and very high compliance standards. It's very difficult for us to have an opportunity to do a small acquisition with this kind of characteristics. Generally, the smaller companies, they're not audited, and what you find when you do a due diligence, that can be very scary. That's not the case here at all. Then talking about the deal structure, before elaborating more on the rationale. This is a transaction that is not involving disbursement by the company. So we're basically getting the company without any payment. The final numbers, obviously, will depend on working capital and other adjustments. So obviously, there's a target working capital. If the working capital is higher, then we have to pay back some. If the working capital is lower than the target, we'll have to pay more. But basically, the expectation is that we don't have to make any disbursement to get this company. So we're getting a company basically for free, a company with no financial leverage, but the reason is obvious. This is a company with very negative EBITDA, and we have to turn it around. Also on due structure, we don't have to approve the General Assembly because we're talking, it's below any threshold that would require us to do so. The due closing would depend on CADE. This is a normal process. We believe this is a safe transaction, but in the end, CADE is who is the organ responsible for approving that. In our view, this deal should take 3 to 4 months to close, depending on the time CADE will take to analyze it. And finally, there is an existing arbitrage of CVS and Onofre against the previous owners. This arbitrage will continue being managed by CVS, and we don't have any interference in the process, we don't have any downside, and we don't have any upside from the arbitrage. Every gain or every loss will belong to CVS here. Then on the next page, we can talk more about the rationale. I think first and foremost, this is an opportunistic turnaround transaction. So again, it's a company losing money that we are getting without paying any price, but we have to turn it around. We have to transform the negative EBITDA in positive EBITDA. And we believe we have the capacity to do so simply by plugging an offering into our structure. Offering operating, supported by corporate structure, supported by our DCs, our IT, our management. I think this is enough to create a relatively fast turnaround. So in the end, the reason why we were able to get the company such a favorable transaction is that we are maybe the only company or one of the few companies who have the resources to do a quick turnaround here. But in addition to the opportunistic side, we believe this transaction accelerates our digital strategy, and I'll detail that in a minute. In terms of the network, it's a small network, but it's complementary to what we have. I don't think I heard questions yesterday about cannibalization, and I don't think this is an issue here. Just like with High-End Drogasil, this wasn't an issue. Obviously, we will never open these 50 locations from the ground up in these neighborhoods where we have already a good market share. But these stores, they come already made with sales there, and we're talking about healthy levels of sales. So there's no problem if you have a store selling 800,000 and there is a nearby Onofre store selling 600,000. There's no cannibalization here. Obviously, if we grow that store from 500, 600 or whatever it is, and let's say we add 100,000 more or 200,000 more in new revenues by using our brands, by leverage or execution, over the additional revenues, there could be cannibalization. But still, I don't know, half the revenues will be new revenues. Half the revenue growth will be new revenues. So this is the store side here is a very similar logic to High-End Drogasil. No problem having two stores side by side with each, two pre-existing stores side by side with each other, as long as they are healthy stores and they're selling well. Okay. And I think another aspect here It has to do with the fact that by doing this transaction, by interacting with the company, by doing a due diligence, I mean, we learned that the company has very good people. Civers was very successful in building the team there. And we believe there are a lot of people there who can help us here, people who bring complementary skills. Because of our growth, every year we're growing, we're increasing our corporate structure, so we can get people from Onofre. So I think that the talent side is also a nice to have in this transaction. Then, when we talk about e-commerce, this is one of the main most favorable aspects of the transaction. We're talking about a company that is one of the leaders in e-commerce in our sector. So this transaction more than doubles our digital revenues. Onofre has higher e-commerce revenues than we have. The idea is to maintain the Onofre brand in e-commerce. So this acquisition allows us to increase our fulfillment scale, which has an obvious impact in terms of fulfillment cost, and delivery density, which has always an obvious effect in terms of reducing delivery costs. So this helps us a lot in going forward with a digital strategy. I think there's a big opportunity here because Onofre is focused in São Paulo. Even though the website is national, they only have fulfillment in São Paulo and here in Minas Gerais. So we'll be able to take Onofre nationally by leveraging our distribution structure in all those markets where we operate. So there's an interesting upside here to that. And finally, Onofre's e-commerce is very complementary to what we do. Because Raia and Drogasil are focused on omnichannel. So we're talking about more and more customers doing click and collect, customers buying from stores to be delivered in 1 hour. So in the end, what this means is that progressively, our e-commerce price for Raia and Drogasil will be more and more similar to the store price. So this omnichannel offering that we have today is based on convenience. Onofre plays on the opposite side of the spectrum. Onofre is a pure play internet brand. Obviously, it has 50 stores, but the capillarity is so low that omnichannel was never really a possibility there. But Onofre is positioned as a pure play e-commerce player, which is price driven, so cheaper price, but less convenient. So you buy today, you pay less, but you only receive the products tomorrow. As I mentioned, as we do more and more click and collect, more and more omnichannel, and as our price will transition for Hydrogen towards the store prices, the pure play pricing segment is a segment that we would originally leave behind. But Onofre allows us to fill that gap. So we'll maintain the Onofre brand position in pricing, which is obviously a lower margin business, but we believe we can create value, we can generate positive profitability by doing that, while allowing Raia and Drogasil to move faster for the omnichannel proposition, which, as I mentioned, is a convenience-driven proposition. So I think it's a very complementary aspect in this acquisition here. And finally, in terms of the stores, we're taking 50 more stores. They will allow us to gain some more scale, and they allow us to gain capillarity. The quality of the portfolio is good. It's very complementary within São Paulo. And obviously, there are stores who lose money, and we'll have to close some of the stores. We haven't decided yet on the branding strategy. Obviously, for the e-commerce, we'll maintain the Onofre brand. But for the store, we will still have to decide on if we maintain or not the Onofre brand, how many stores we maintain, how many stores we close. So we're now, as we sign the transaction now, we're now moving towards developing a detailed integration plan so that day one after closing, we can act fast and we can convert the negative EBITDA into positive EBITDA. Finally, before Q&A, I would like to point on some highlights for IR. We will publish first quarter numbers on April 29, second quarter August 6, third quarter October 29. And we have three scheduled investor conferences, two in Brazil, BTG Pactual next week in São Paulo, on April 2nd and 3rd, Bradesco conference in São Paulo, and finally, May 15th and 16th, the LATAM CEO conference of Itaú in New York that Marcelo and myself will be attending. So these were our prepared remarks, and now we'll go to Q&A. Thank you.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan has a question.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. So I have a few ones. So the first one is related to the M&A strategy. So like it seems that this deal was kind of an opportunistic one. So I'd like to understand like what's the mindset of the company towards further M&A in the future. So if you're actively looking for that. My second question goes into the e-commerce strategy. So you mentioned that even like being smaller on online operations are actually larger than RDs. So I would like to understand like what they do different from you, particularly in terms of restricted products. And also it would be interesting to understand like if you have any target in terms of like online orders here for your e-commerce site. The third thing would be on the pricing platform, right? So we saw kind of flattish margin on the retail side, but we had some investments in certain categories. So I'd like to understand how this pricing platform helped to cushion further margin pressure and how we should be looking at it in the future. And lastly, concerning private label, right? So if we would think about like expanding to new categories further and how the penetration is evolving throughout this year as you focus on strengthening your competitive positioning. Thank you.
Okay, Joseph, thank you for the questions. I mean, the first thing is that until recently, the whole focus was on organic expansion. We were ramping up to 240 stores, and obviously we had neither the time nor the energy to look into and think about M&A. We are now at a point in which we have stabilized 240 stores. That was the number for last year. That is the guidance for this year. So obviously, we are much more open at looking at M&A. We look at a lot of potential opportunities. I mean, you don't have an idea of how many transactions come our way, but our bar is very high here. So one of the aspects here in Onofre is that we're talking about a company that has its fully formal CVS level of compliance and so on. So it's very unusual to find a small, medium-sized asset with this kind of credibility in terms of their numbers, in terms of their business. So what I'll tell you is we are open to do selective M&A whenever we think it makes sense. I think another good aspect of this strategy is that there will be a big learning, and I think if Onofre, the integration is successful as we believe it to be, I think it can be very encouraging. So, for example, we have 50 stores in São Paulo. We'll have the chance to, we know how much they sell. We have the chance of understanding how much value we can really add. So under our operation and maybe under our brands, if we learn that a store that sells 500 becomes 700, this can give us the encouragement to be more aggressive in M&A in the future. We will learn also how much, we don't think there will be a huge distraction, but we think there will be some. But depending on how tough or how easy it is, we can also build more confidence for new deals in the future. So I think it's a very good timing to be trying a small acquisition like this, that in addition to create value, in addition to deliver a positive acceleration of our strategy, will also allow us to learn and maybe to be more aggressive in the future. In terms of e-commerce, Onofre with 45% of what Onofre sells is e-commerce. So we're talking about something like, 230 million, something like that. This is more than two times what we do with RD. But let's remember that RD is two brands, Raya and Drogasil. So brand by brand, Onofre sells three times more than either Raya or Drogasil. Obviously, it's a different strategy. Onofre won't be an omnichannel strategy. As I mentioned before, it will be a pure-play, price-driven strategy. But it adds up to picking scale. It adds up to delivery density. We'll be able to leverage our gross margin, our buying terms for Onofre. We'll be able to expand this delivery service nationally. Another difference, Garonoff is basically only São Paulo. High-end review is much more national. So you can see the relevance of the business on offer has built on e-commerce. So we believe we have a strong asset to carry forward with a lot of synergies to extract on the e-commerce side. Then your third question was on pricing. I think one of the elements that helped us this year was by implementing a new pricing platform from the front store. So this was very important for us. This year, we have another pricing initiative. We are conducting a pricing project with Bain for the pharma side. So we're defining a much more structured, analytical, and detailed, proactive pricing strategy. And then we use artificial intelligence to be able to react to price movements. It's easy to see that with 1,800 stores times 14,000 SKUs, it's impossible for the human eye to catch every movement. So with artificial intelligence, we can see a lot of movements in terms of competitive price changes, in terms of molecules that gained or lost share very quick. So these are elements that refuel our pricing decisions, and therefore it will help either increase margins or accelerate growth. In either way, we increase the gross profit, and that's what we want to do. And finally, private label is progressing very well. Private label is already more than 5% of front store sales. We have new launches that will be very important in the coming months, like diapers, for example. It's a very high-volume category. We have a lot of categories to complement. There is one brand, we should be a new brand under 30. So private label is in 5%. I'm sure it gets to 10% in a couple of years, relatively quick, you know, 3 years, something like that. And then we'll see what the future holds for us.
Thank you, Eugenio. Just taking the opportunity, I just wanted to explore a little bit the super apps and how does it play out within your digital strategy. I know you're part of Rappi, but I wanted to understand, like, how do you see that in the future? Probably it's like non-material now, but how do you see this trend here? Thank you.
That's a good question. Right now, Rappi is immaterial. It's very low volume. And in the end, I think the development for us, the very proposition for the consumer that Rappi can have is to have quick delivery of, let's say, your son has a short throat, you need a medicine in half an hour, and then Rappi is very effective for that. Our e-commerce strategy, especially for our key segments, which are chronic patients and mothers, is to go direct. So just as an example, when we start looking at customer P&L instead of transaction or store P&L, the whole mindset of the company changes. Our idea is that if someone is a loyal, chronic patient with high spending, that customer should buy from us in 1 hour with zero delivery fee. So if we are able to improve the value proposition for the chronic patients and other core segments, I don't think the super apps can be more competitive than what we can do. We can deliver for free for them. We can apply any discount program they have, either loyalty card or PBM. I think it's a much, much deeper value proposition, the one that we can give to a core customer. But obviously, we can't offer free delivery for everybody. So there will always be patients, always be customers for home. Rappi could have a better value proposition.
Thank you, Eugenio. Okay, so I'll just throw another one. So thinking on the restricted products, right? So how far are we from potential mail orders? So basically going back to that strategy of increasing the pocket share within the chronic patient. So basically just like sending the order automatically. Thank you.
Okay, well, our agenda is really focusing on these chronic patients and other core segments like mothers, buyers of high beauty products and so on. So the whole value proposition is towards them. The way we see, for example, e-commerce until Onofre was something like 1% of our revenues. 1%, 2%, or 5% of delivery, click and collect, doesn't move the needle. But what moves the needle is that if this 1, 2, or 5 means that this customer represents 5, 10, or 20 of my total revenue pool, and if this customer is engaged through an app that allows us to offer a much better experience and collect much more loyalty and value, this can be transformational. So our view is omnichannel. Omnichannel doesn't mean that the money will be made on click and collect or delivery, although that could very well happen. But the goal is that over the whole lifetime of the customer, over the whole spectrum of channels with which the customer interacts, we believe that a connected customer will generate much more loyalty, spending, and value for us, and will generate much more, much better experience and convenience for that customer. This is the view that we have. And one or two or five won't change the needle, but when you look overall what this customer buys, this can move the needle, and this can be transformational. We have set a guidance, a goal of increasing omnichannel customers from 0.5 to 2 million by the end of next year. So we are thinking about exponential growth here, and I think this is 1 year. Our ambition is much bigger beyond 2019.
Perfect. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Remembering, if you have a question, please press star 1. It appears to be no further questions. Now, I'll turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Okay, first and foremost, I'd like to thank you all for following our call and for your support as shareholders. I'd like to summarize some of the points we made in this presentation. I mean, obviously, 2018 was a challenging year with increased competition, softer growth, which led to margin pressures that we lost 30 bps margins for retail, 50 bps if we put the 4 buyer mix effect together. But still, we have a retail EBITDA of 8% with one-third of the stores still undergoing maturation. So I think we are in a very strong competitive positioning. When you look around us, what happens is that there was a lot of capital allocation in this market. A lot of companies opening a lot of stores, and this also has an effect on our software growth. But the result is that when the whole market invested so much capital in a difficult environment with margin pressures, what we see is huge leverage increases all around the industry. And this is translating in less openings and more closures over the last quarters. We have companies reducing their guidance. This means the beginning of a normalization. This also means that on a relative basis, with the kind of profitability, balance sheet, and growth that we still maintain, we have never been better positioned in our industry to keep leading the consolidation moving forward than we are today. So this is a key message that I'd like to be very clear. And in spite of the challenges of the year, we also had very significant achievements. Like the record expansion of 240 stores a year. This is a number this market has never seen, and I don't know if any other retailer of any segment has ever opened so many stores in a year. Although we had share challenges through the year, we ended the year at a very high note with stability in São Paulo, which is a real achievement given the competition increase we saw, and we gained in every other market. We underwent a very bold price repositioning, which we did and still managed to maintain gross margins and to lose only 30 bps of retail margin. But this has completely changed our growth in our growth momentum, and I think we'll see the consequence through this year in terms of growth normalization and through next year as I think we get back to normal life. And finally, I think we started a very ambitious digital transformation. I don't know any other retailer in Brazil who has click and collect in 1,800 stores that can be fulfilled in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour. Every click and collect operation that we know of is 2 days or more. In our case, because the inventory is already in the store, you order now, in 10 minutes, the product is probably ready for you to pick. We're now getting ready to launch click and collect for controlled medicines, which obviously we have an additional step, which is verifying the prescription. But still, these are products that it's generally difficult for the customer to find the whole inventory they need. People generally buy 3 units per product, A lot of these products are low turnover products that are difficult to find. So for a customer knowing he can go in a store and do click and collect of a controlled medicine and being fully aware that he's finding the product, and this is a much expedited process, this is tremendous value creation. We also want to bring the digital transformation inside the store, removing the pain points of our of the customer experience, improving the shopping experience that we offer to the consumer. And again, the view is we can connect, where we can engage with a connected consumer at a much deeper level than we can engage with a normal consumer. So a consumer who downloads the app will be able to do a to send reminders to take the pills in the morning, to send reminders to refill the prescription. We'll be able to offer promotions, and these will increase the share of wallet of these consumers. These will increase the value we provide them. These will increase their spend with us. And the other aspect is that the assets that we have to support the digital transformation are absolutely unique. We have more than 1,800 stores, that and a very staggering number is that 86% of the Brazilian A consumers live within a kilometer and a half radius from our stores. So our stores, they are customer acquisition machine. CRM, omnichannel, is a customer retention machine. And then loyalty program, pricing, promotions, CRM, private label, these are value creation machines for this consumer. So I think we have 30 million identified consumers. This is the biggest database in Brazil, combined with 86% of A-class people living within a kilometer and a half radius from our stores. These are unique assets that will allow us to transform our business, to create a new growth engine through digital. So I'd like to thank you again for attending the call, and we'll be available for you for our roadshows, conferences, and even conference calls. Thank you very much.
Closing and connecting.